Welcome to the Fully Express podcast with Krenna. I am your podcast host, Krenna Soto, and this is the show where we have conversations that invite you into living a life fully express, creating relationships where you feel like your most authentic self, and creating a career and professional life as your fullest authentic self as well. And on today's episode, we're going to keep on the theme of Mental Health Awareness Month. As you know, the last couple episodes, we've been really talking about mental health. The first episode that we had this month was around how to support your mental health by honoring your capacity and how to optimize that through health and nutrition. The second episode, we talked about how to support a loved one that is going through their mental health but still staying true to your fullest expressed self. Last week, we had Sharissa Souza on the podcast to talk about what it was like to be diagnosed with bipolar disorder and embracing rage and how she has deepened her meditation practice to help her actually process and be with rage and how she has been able to find deeper accesses of like inner peace and inner harmony through her meditation practices. And on today's episode, we're bringing in a sister of mine. Her name is Olivia Wetter. And Olivia and I met, what is it now, like 3 years ago? I feel like time is flying. Olivia and I's story is so sweet because I swear we were on our way to a retreat and she got put in my car and I was driving. And the entire time that she was with me, she was sitting in the front. I think you were sitting in the front seat, right?
Yeah.
And as you're sitting in the front seat, I'm like, oh my goodness, I want to be best friends with this girl. Like we just connected so quickly on both like a fun level, but then also on such like a deep level really, really quickly. Olivia and I met at the same retreat that Nick and I met. That Chris and I have met, that Chris has also been on this podcast. I feel like I've brought everyone podcast for that thing. But I'm so excited to have Olivia come on here because Olivia has so much to share. Olivia has her degree in psychology. She has worked and coached with women that are struggling with their ADHD and being neurodivergent. She strongly believes in supporting mental health and has personally struggled with that, but just is such a great advocate and figure on standing on that online and throughout her life. And so I knew it would be perfect to invite her onto the podcast during this month because we're going to dive into all things, you know, transitioning from where you're at to where you're going, but also navigating mental health and how do you actually do that in this world today. So I'm going to pass the baton over to her. I'm going to let her introduce herself, like formally introduce herself, because I can't wait for you to hear from her.
Well, hi. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here, especially during, you know, mental health awareness month. As you know, that's like so near and dear for me. So just a little bit about me, you know, this is always like, I feel like always all over the place, ADHD things, but I do have extensive education and experience working with, you know, all ages of like ADHD, autism, learning disabilities. I was a school psychologist for like 10 years before transitioning into being an ADHD coach for women, which I did that for a little while and have retired both of those hats currently, but I do still continue to create content and am present on social media to share, you know, relatable, like real life things that women with ADHD have to navigate on a daily basis and things that are helpful for us. I was diagnosed late. So I wasn't diagnosed until I was like 31. So there's a lot that goes into that when you start to realize, wow, like all these things that I dealt with my whole life had so much connection to my ADHD. I just had no idea. And I just feel like it's been an ongoing, continuous journey for myself, especially with other co-occurring mental health things that I've had to navigate and just leaning into things that make sense for me as someone who's neurodivergent versus trying to fit inside of this box that most of us have been conditioned to fit inside of that don't really work for us. And so, you know, I've really been leaning into that and have transitioned into like, you know, I'm working for an agency and doing more marketing type of work now. So yeah, here we are.
Yeah, no, I love that. I would love to start kind of dive deeper into like, what was it like to being diagnosed with ADHD? Like that journey of like 31 years into life and saying like, oh, this is a diagnosis. And what was it like to like look back at your life? What did that look like?
Yeah, there were a few components to that because before I got diagnosed, I had a little bit of like a, oh, I think I might have this. And this was before this was really even on social media, but because of, you know, I was a school psychologist, so I was around a lot of kids that had ADHD, and I'd be like, you know, like there were certain things that just started to click. And then I hit a really bad like clinical burnout. And I was originally diagnosed with situational depression, but, you know, they had put me on medication. I know I've explained to you, like I had serotonin syndrome when that happened. So I had to get off of any antidepressant that I was on. And I was like, there's something else here. And I remember going to my doctor and being like, I think that I might have ADHD. Like, what if this is what's caused everything? And they were like, well, actually, that could be. And they had referred me to a specialist. And it took me a little while because I was moving from New York to California at that point. So I waited till I got to California to start that process. And when I finally got diagnosed, I was like, it was like a sigh of relief. Like, I knew it, you know, like it was almost like a validation piece of like, okay, I knew that this is what was going on with me. But then there was a huge part that like I went back like through all the parts of my life that, you know, was related to anything that had to do with my ADHD. And I was like, wow, had I only known, had my parents only known, had my teachers only known, had anyone known that like these things were part of my ADHD, that I would have been better supported instead of, you know, and I don't think that anyone intentionally necessarily like tried to make me feel at fault for anything or shame me for anything. But I did get a lot of like negative reactions for things that were symptoms of my ADHD.
Like what?
I've always been someone that has like significant sensory issues. So like my sensitivities, like I would have a lot of meltdowns when I was a kid because of those. And I don't think that my parents understood that at all. So that was a huge thing. I was more inattentive. So a lot of like the daydreaming in class, like, you know, I'd get called on in class and they'd think I was paying attention because I was staring blankly at them, but I had no idea what my teachers were saying. So I had a lot of anxiety because of that. I never wanted to be called on because I didn't really ever know what was going on. And it was often in my report cards, like, you know, does well in class, but doesn't pay attention. Which this piece isn't always necessarily talked about a lot. I think it's starting to be talked about a little bit more, but it's very hard for people with ADHD, women and men included, to regulate their emotions because of, you know, ADHD isn't just an issue with attention. It's a self-regulation issue. And part of self-regulation is emotions. And I didn't understand this about myself, right? So I always had these very intense emotions and reactions to those emotions. And I was never taught how to deal with them properly. So I would have a lot of, you know, these external reactions to what was going on internally to me and was often called like, you're so dramatic, you're too sensitive. Like a lot of those things. And that stayed with me as an adult. So I was always really scared to like express when I was feeling anything that hurt me or made me mad or made me sad. And so I kept it in, which also wasn't helpful because eventually I'd explode and it would come out. I would say like those were the main things for me. And I had social anxiety, which is linked, very common for people with ADHD to also experience social anxiety.
Wow. I mean, you just shared like what it was like to like, if you, let's just say you had these things, like how life could be different, but also how, because you didn't have this awareness or the people around you, let's just say the people that surrounded you, whether they were teachers or your parents or just adults in general, like if they only had these tool sets or this awareness that they could have potentially even supported you even better to a place where maybe you wouldn't have felt wrong for being too emotional, or you wouldn't have felt like there's something bad with me or that I should be shameful for being too sensitive, right? Like this like extra, sounds like an extra dialogue or extra story that was created because unfortunately the people in your life just didn't have that education or have that perspective. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say that. And it's even interesting too, because as an adult, like when I was in grad school specifically, so part of what some people can also struggle with when it comes to ADHD, you know, you think of organization and you think of organization in terms of like your house, But part of what my organizational difficulties, and they still are, is getting what's in my head out on paper, or even sometimes when I'm talking, which is kind of why I can circle talk, which I'm aware of. But when I had to do report writing to be a school psychologist, that was a huge part of my job, was writing these reports, right? I had to do evaluations for students in special ed, and I had to do reports. And I remember my report writing teacher saying, "You are really bad at writing, basically. And if you don't get help, you're going to fail my class and you're not going to graduate." It was like the last semester for me to graduate. And I remember going home and just crying, because I was like, I'm not going to be able to do this. And I knew I was struggling, but I just didn't know why. Like, I had no idea. Yeah. It's like, I don't know why this is so hard for me. And I learned through that whole experience that I'm not someone that can sit and come up with some type of like writing format on my own. I need to follow a template, or it's significantly hard for me to organize my thoughts at all. And still true to this day. So I always make sure I have something to follow.
Let's talk about that a little bit more, right? Because I feel like in our world today, and you and I have talked about this so much, right? Like the corporate world, or the way that you go to school and the way that you do life is really set up in a certain way. And that in that certain way and that structure is set up for the general population, I guess is the best way to say it, or like the overarching like population. But how did you navigate that piece? Like, knowing eventually once you started to see the pieces, one, maybe talk about the struggles of like corporate schooling, the schooling system, however it was that they wanted you to fit into this way. And what have you found in the most recent years, maybe like how you actually can show up and still be productive, still be successful, but not necessarily following the quote unquote standard way of doing life. And I'm using very generic terms because I'm trying to be generic, and it's difficult because our world is complicated. But
in regard to school and even like work, when I was in like a school psychologist, because I struggled a lot as a school psychologist and I never shared it with anyone. Paperwork was really hard, filing papers. I had piles on my desks that made sense to me, but they were not organized piles, and I hid a lot of it. So I knew that if people knew I was struggling, or at least like that's how I felt internally, they would think that I wasn't capable of doing my job. It was a huge thing for me. And again, like, mind you, I did not know I had ADHD at this point. I just knew that that's how I functioned, didn't know why I functioned that way. And I, even when I was in meetings, when we had to report things out, I constantly had anxiety because I was like, I'm not someone that could be put on the spot, right? Like I need time to like process my thoughts before things can come out most of the time. And so I just always felt very inadequate, honestly, like in those settings all the time. Even though I was capable and I was showing up and I was doing, and maybe other people weren't viewing me that way, I was viewing myself that way. And it was a struggle because I always was like, maybe I'm not supposed to do this job. Maybe I'm not supposed to be here. And so that's always been like a constant story that came up for me. Back then, I didn't really have the tools or awareness or know how to manage that. If I could go back, I would have done a lot of things differently for myself and probably not felt as much shame, and just been able to ask for things that I needed in the workplace for that, especially because given my job, right? Like,
right,
we're helping children, you know, and teens and all of them with the same things that some of us adults also have and struggle with. And I know that this isn't a blanket thing in the corporate world where, oh, if you have ADHD, they're automatically going to accommodate you and not in some way try to like criticize you or penalize you, because I know that that's not true. I've had clients in the past where they couldn't divulge that because it meant keeping their job or not. And it's really hard. And I hope in the future, as we move forward, those things can start to change more and more as people advocate and more awareness and understanding of certain things like ADHD, autism, and other things, right, that people struggle with that can impact their ability to show up in their job the way that someone who doesn't have that shows up. Another thing that I, especially now, is like, I don't compare myself to other people like I used to. So that's been a huge, like, okay, that person functions that way and that's great. And I love that for them. However, that same thing isn't going to work for me. And so a lot of my last few years has been trial and error. And I think this is kind of ongoing, you know, as life changes, as circumstances change, of like, what does help support me in my day to day or in my job, what I'm doing and what doesn't, and letting go of the things that don't. Because I think too, in the ADHD space, and I've had to, you know, work with my, when I was doing ADHD coaches, work with my clients on, you know, hey, like, just because this is like an ADHD strategy that might help you, it doesn't mean that it's going to help every single person with ADHD. So if it doesn't, don't force it. Try something else or do it a different way. And I think that when we realize that, it helps let go of that, like, oh, well, this is working for other people with ADHD. Why is this not working for me? Because then we can put ourselves back into that story of, I'm not capable, you know, I'm never going to be able to do this, I'm never going to be able to do that. And it can just kind of continue that story that a lot of people with ADHD or neurodivergence just in general tend to hold on to.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I feel like that is something that, you know, the podcast is so set up to do, is really inviting you into your fullest expressed self. But it's what is uniquely to you. And you're talking so much to, like, there's so many different tools and strategies out there and ways of doing life and blah, blah, blah. And people are always going to say, like, this is what works for me. But you're basically saying, like, hey, try what works for you, but giving yourself the permission to be like, this works for me and it works really well, and I'm going to keep doing it. And also being okay with, like, this doesn't work for me and I'm okay with that. It's like truly finding your way. And so, and when it comes to those with ADHD, what are, I guess, some things that someone could try and be like, hey, this works for me or this doesn't work for me? Is there anything that comes to mind, like, just strategy wise as they live? I know there's like just the idea of like doing things and testing them out and feeling them, but are there specific things that you have noticed that help you or have worked past clients or just in general?
Yes, that is a very good question, because I feel like there are a lot of blanket things that can help. I would, like, the thing with that and like answering that and like full of like a, hey, like XYZ, it just depends on like what someone is specifically struggling with their ADHD, because it can be a multitude of things. So it kind of just depends on like where their biggest struggle or obstacle is, and like, what are, hey, here are these like few things that you can do. I will name like a couple of like the more common things that I think a lot of people with ADHD tend to struggle with. I think one of the biggest things would probably be time management, right? Like, we often have a lot of time blindness, so we aren't always aware of like length of time or how much time is passing. And so something that I constantly have to have, and again, like, this can look different, but like having time in front of my face in any way that I possibly can has been one of the most helpful things, whether it's like clocks in certain places, timers on my phone, reminders, those kind of things. But again, like, this is where, okay, you have to customize this to a way that works for you. And sometimes you might need to try something first and then tweak it as you go. I think emotional regulation is probably a huge thing. But again, this is big on, I think the biggest thing with that is like people with ADHD learning how to pause before anything else. You know, there's so, and you know this too, there's so many different coping tools to dealing with regulating our emotions when we're triggered. I think the hardest thing with ADHD is the impulsiveness to react. So if you can learn how to pause and like catch yourself in those moments, you know, where you're like, okay, I'm being triggered, and what are some things I can do to calm myself down? Whether it's like deep breathing or, you know, distracting yourself for a little bit until you can actually like process what's going on. I think that is a huge thing for most people with ADHD.
I think that's super helpful. I mean, I would love to dive into like the emotional regulation a little bit more. Like, yeah, when you're talking about emotions, what kind of emotions are we talking that get increased or are more intense or you can be impulsive too?
I think anger, like being mad, frustrated, even sadness. Like, I think it's more of like the unpleasant emotions, but also it can teeter to the more pleasant ones, right? Like, when we want to feel like that really intense, like euphoric feeling, or we're looking for that dopamine, you know, we can end up going towards things and doing things that might spike that those feelings, those elated feelings that we're looking for, that aren't always the best, you know, like think of like unnecessary shopping sprees and like those kind of things. But for me, and I think for most people with ADHD, the harder part is more of the unpleasant, like when you're mad or someone triggers you in a way that maybe like hurts you or upsets you, and very quick to just like kind of go off. And it can cause a lot of, you know, relational difficulties. And even whether it's work, whether it's partnership, whether it's friendship, because now we're reacting out of that intensity of that emotion versus like, you know, what the situation actually is and what's happening. And I've been there before. I've gotten a lot better at, you know, noticing when I'm being triggered and processing it. It doesn't mean that the intensity isn't there. It's still there. It's just that, you know, I don't react, or I'm not as quick to react like I'm used to, but it can be really challenging because then you say things that you might not mean, or, you know, it could go to the other side where you shut down and you isolate yourself and you feel like you can't trust someone, or, you know, you're interpreting whatever they said or did in a completely different way that maybe they didn't mean. And I think conflict is really hard for a lot of people with ADHD. It's really hard.
What does the, if you're open to going this very far, what is like the internal dialogue or the internal experience feel like when you're in that? And my intention behind that question is, one, if anyone's listening to this that has experienced that, like I want to feel relatable, but I also want to give someone also the tools of like, hey, this is what someone else is going through, or like the context or the understanding behind that too, like with someone that has ADHD or that is going through any, and is maybe just any intense reaction or emotional reaction. What does that internal dialogue or internal experience feel like?
Yeah, I think a lot of the times, I'll just try to like generalize this as much as possible, like that people can tend to experience to some degree, is like, depending on the context of the situation, it can feel a lot like, you know, this person thinks I'm lazy, or this person thinks that I'm not capable, or, you know, then it could start to switch to like, I am lazy, or I am stupid, or I am, you know, a terrible partner or a terrible friend, or, you know, why is this person even friends with me? And it could even turn into like, let's just say something with work, like, I'm not capable of doing this job, like, I'm fooling everyone. Like, a lot of it comes too from like that masking feeling. So when we feel like, you know, someone sees a part of us that we were hiding, then it's like that mask has come off. And now we're like, oh my gosh, like, I'm a fraud. And now this person sees this. It's a lot of like those more like internal dialogue of like feeling like an imposter or feeling wrong in some way, you know, and that could look different for everyone. It's just an example. But yeah, like, oh, this person hates me, they don't like me. It's a lot of those feelings, especially in more of a like a relational dynamic. And it can be hard for people with ADHD to maintain friendships or even like partners, because they get so much in their head of how terrible they are and how people are better off without having them because of, you know, X, Y, and Z. And a lot of it is tied to the challenges that come with their ADHD, that, you know, they can tend to push people away, that those people aren't necessarily trying to be pushed away.
Right. Thank you for sharing that. I know that can be hard to share. I think that's so important to share though, too, because you're right. It's like, hey, I'm navigating this, it's happening externally. I'm reacting in this way. I'm also have this internal experience. I'm double thinking about everything. It sounds like I'm like double thinking everything. I'm also trying to prevent this from happening. And I'm trying to find a way to show up in the world where no one can see that I have these quote unquote extra parts to my being or way of showing up. And it sounds like a whole thing, like a web of things that are happening all at once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very intertwined and you don't realize it though in the moment, right? Like as you're going through this and in the real life experience, you're not sitting there like, unless you get to that level of awareness where you can like kind of pull yourself out, or you have like safe people that can pull you out of it, you know, like it's very easy to get suffocated by it and just like absorbed and wrapped up in it, where it does impact your external life. And then you start to feel that very like lonely or feeling very alone in the world, and like no one understands you, mm-hmm. and that you're, you know, this alien to everyone else because of those parts. And a lot of it is because so many of us, and even those that were diagnosed, you know, as kids, right? Because no one really taught anyone that was diagnosed as a child about their ADHD. So they're still learning as adults. What that means for them is, you know, being so masked and putting on front and having this persona, I have it all together and I'm fine all the time, when that might not be their reality.
Yeah. Wow. So how have you found your way through that? Like, how have you like kind of find your path into like really finding your direction? Like, what are some things, some people or some tools or things that have allowed you to navigate that? Like truly be like, hey, I'm stuck in this. Like, how do you reach out and say, hey, I need assistance getting out of this? What are the tools to help you get out of that? Or even the people?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing for me is having safe, like supportive people around me. I think that's been the biggest game changer. So I think having those safe, supportive people has been helpful, because it is hard to ask for help. I think that's one of the most challenging things in the journey, and I've come a long way with that, but I would be lying if I said that I don't still struggle with that at times. But I think for me, I'm fortunate enough to have people, including you, you know, that know me enough to be like, let me check on Olivia, you know, like, let me make sure she's okay. And like, I do have people who are there, and there are times where I can like reach out to like one person, like, hey, this is what I'm experiencing. And I think for me as a woman, my biggest things or my hardest points are, you know, because I have, and I know that this is like a whole nother topic, with my premenstrual dysphoric disorder, PMDD, those are my hardest moments where it's hardest for me to pull myself out. I think another thing that's helpful, let's say for some reason you don't have those like safe people, or you just don't feel that way in your current moment, there's a lot of validity around distraction coping skills that are healthy. So I know a lot of people are like, oh, you know, you want to feel your feelings, or you want to be in your feelings. But for someone with ADHD who's already so in their feelings and feeling it too intensely, and they don't know how to get out of that, distraction strategies are probably going to be like your biggest friend. And they call it, like, the formal, like, technical name of it is DBT, but examples are like getting up and getting ice and putting it on your face or your neck, you know, taking a hot bath, like anything that can get you out of your head so that you can distract yourself from being too in it. Because when you're already too in it, you know, like wanting to feel it or anything like that kind of just makes it worse. And so that's something that I've really been leaning more into, especially in the last like eight or 12 like months, is like having those distraction things that I know are helpful to me.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you brought that up too, because like you can hear so much on social media and podcasts, like feel it, get into it, dive deeper, process it. And let's say someone that doesn't realize they have ADHD, or they already have really intense emotions, sometimes that's not exactly what you need, right? And so this kind of goes back to like the earlier in the podcast, especially when it comes to your mental health, like you are such a unique person, and what your experience is does not mean every strategy out there meets that person. But it can be very difficult to listen because of that, right? Like you're talking to the fact that you already feel so much. And if anything, you need to break the episode in a way. You gotta need to interrupt the pattern of what's happening so you can come out of your free state, or you come out of this like deep, deep emotional processing, and you're saying, I actually do need to distract. Versus when you hear on social media or like podcasts that you can read, they're like, no, stop distracting yourself. Stop coping. Go deeper. You know?
Yeah. And it's a huge thing, because I think, again, this goes back to like finding the things that work for you in certain moments. So a lot of the journey is a lot of self-awareness that, like, you know, has to come into play in order to put these things into place. And I think it changes sometimes too, right? Like sometimes a hot bath isn't going to do it for me. And like, I need to go to the route of like something cold or like going towards the ice, you know, like, and I'm saying these things because these are the things that I primarily utilize for me, but there's so many different things, you know, there's so many different tools or things that you can do that distract mm-hmm. yourself. And like, it could be something as simple as like watching your favorite TV show. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. But if that gets someone, like, it's not the most unhealthy thing. And if that gets someone out of their, you know, in the intensity of what they're feeling, that can swallow them up, then like much better than like someone leaning towards like a substance or like something that actually is more unhealthy than that, you know?
Yeah. And you're talking to almost like there now you have so much self-awareness, right? And now you have this intuitive instinct of like, hey, I know what I need in this moment, or I know what I need when this is happening for me. But I think that also comes from experience. Like you've been doing this for years, right? You dove deep into this for the last few years, and you've also been very, very educated on this, and you took the time to figure out what that is for you, which I think is another important thing for us to just take away in our daily thing of like, try the thing. If it doesn't work, that's okay. But then if you find something that works, awesome. Keep doing it and use it when you need to, and just keep kind of only just like piling things on your tool belt.
Yeah.
As we start to come to an end, I would love to know, how has it been for you as someone that is neurodivergent, is has ADHD, but also is very multi-passionate, has so much depth to her, wants all the things in life. How have you really stepped into like truly in a way, like, how do I say, like owning this? I don't know if the way it's like owning this, like making this a part of you, but also feeling like you are fully stepping into your like your most authentic self in this world. Like what does that look like? And where are you planning on like taking that? Like how has almost like falling in love with these parts of you too and bringing that to the world as a part of you?
Yeah, I think one of the hardest things, and I think this can probably be true for a lot of people that are neurodivergent, is changing like careers or what you do in the world, right? Like I've transitioned so many times and it's never been easy. It's always been, you know, I went from like the school, leaving being a school psychologist to the ADHD coaching, and then, you know, leaving the ADHD coaching and going towards, you know, what I'm doing now, which is like so different, like more like social media marketing, still doing content creation, you know, and lifestyle stuff for people with ADHD. But even transitioning from that was so hard because we are taught and told, you know, you're only supposed to do one thing and you stick with that until you retire. I remember like when I left school, my mom would always be like, this is what you're doing for the rest of your life. You're retiring doing this. And like, I was so conditioned, like you went to school for this, you got these loans, like you can't just leave this. And so there's always that, like there's a little bit of guilt and like you can feel really confused. And I think a part of me stepping and owning more of my neurodivergence is that like it's okay for me to change. It's okay mm-hmm. for me to move away from things. It's okay for it to be completely different from anything else I've ever done. And even with like where I live too, I mean, you know that I've gone from like place to place to place, and like a huge part of my journey is like, well, where do I belong in the world? You know, like, and I think that that's like an ongoing thing for me. I wouldn't say that I have all of that figured out, but I think that's a huge part of it too. It's like, I don't have it all together and I don't have it all figured out, and that's okay. Like I used to be one of those people that thought that I needed to like have everything planned out and, you know, my life was going to be like in this like periodic methodical way, and it's nothing like that, and that's okay mm-hmm. because that is what feels good to me. So I think for me, leaning into the things that in those moments, like this is what I want, this feels good, this is what I'm moving towards, it's okay for me to let go of XYZ and move to this if this is what is lighting me up right now. And I think that that's huge for people with ADHD because we are an interest-based nervous system, meaning like what we feel passionate about and what really interests us is the things that we really do need to, you know, embrace. Because if we don't, I think that's when life starts to feel less fulfilling. Maybe like we start to feel more lost or frustrated, or, you know, like whatever that feeling that might come up. But I think that when we try to put ourselves in a box that we're not supposed to be in, that's when we struggle more than when we're like, hey, this is me. This is how I function. And it's okay for me to lean into this.
Yeah. I also think like being your friend and like witnessing you, like you've also done such a beautiful job of like also listening to the things that don't fit. Like, and when I say that, like the aspects of a job, like the details that go into a position that you've stepped into or whatever that looks like, hey, like this no longer feels good to me. It's burning me out, or it's hitting my capacity, or it's just somehow not fitting into my puzzle. And like, I think you've beautifully done this like dance between life. Like I didn't get to know you as much as when you were a school psychologist, but I remember you transitioning from that to coaching to where you are now. And along the way, you've just listened to like, wow, this really excites me. Like I get high off doing tasks ABC, but then like tasks, I don't know, E and D are like the worst. Like I cannot do those. And like, you've come to a place of like really piecing together this beautiful career that supports you and the things that you really love to do. Also tasks that you're like, oh, I didn't realize that that was going to be something that I actually am really good at and I like. And also tasks that are like stretchy in some ways because it's a new job, right? So like you're like, you've stepped in this beautiful molding almost of your professional career as you've learned about yourself, as you learned about your ADHD. And like, that's what I also want to highlight, this like journey that you've gone through, because A, you wanted to support your mental health in a lot of ways, right? You wanted to support yourself as a woman, but you also wanted to feel good in this life so you didn't feel boxed in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a huge part too, is like, I think a lot of us can pick up skills much quicker than we think we can. At least this is what I've learned for myself on my own journey. And, you know, being able to do that also allows us to be able to like switch and change things and still utilize, like I'm still using psychology and some of the stuff that I'm doing, right? It's just, it looks much different now. And I think if we can like shift our perspective on things like that, and let go of what we think like everything is supposed to look like for us, like in the future, and just like live in that, like, hey, this is what I really like now, and this is what's working for me. Then we get to, you know, find those things that we are good at and feel good to us.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. From where we started in this podcast episode was really tackling like how the world sees you and how to work through that, to where you've now taken this episode and just your own journey, is like finding a way to create your space, but not based on everyone else's like data points or structure or how to do it. It's like so much more on like, what does my body need? What does my system need? How does my internal world and my mental health need to be supported? So I'm living a good life. And I hope that more people can take that too, because too many of us are living and forcing ourselves into that box. And by forcing ourselves into that box, life starts to feel way heavier. Maybe the underlining symptoms are still there, but the intensity behind being in a box or the intensity of trying to fit in almost highlights everything even more in some ways.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think it's just important for people to, you know, remind themselves of that. And I know it's hard, right? Like, in theory, it sounds a little bit easier, but I think the more that you do that, you get like desensitized in a way. I'm not saying that there's not going to be uncomfortable feelings with it, but there is. But if you just like keep pushing past that, I do think it gets easier. And I can say this too, because I've forced things and, you know, I've been through two significant burnouts already. And, you know, people with ADHD tend to go through the burnout cycle much more quicker and frequent than people that don't have ADHD, or and even people with autism too can also like go through this. And it's because we are trying to function in a way that we're not supposed to, we might not realize it. So it's like really honoring yourself makes a huge difference, even in terms of like, you know, how we feel on a day-to-day and preventing from being sucked into those burnout cycles.
Yeah, totally. I'm with you, which that's a whole nother topic. And
yeah,
even like the PMDD thing, like I would love for you to like come and talk about that possibly soon. I know you're also a big advocate for this, but just want to remind anyone that is listening to this episode that, hey, yeah, we talked about a lot of things here. We talked a lot about the symptoms, but there's nothing like working with a professional and making sure that you're being treated uniquely to your diagnosis. And I will also say, you know, as someone, for example, I'm a trauma-informed somatic practitioner, I got a new lens and I'm like, I don't even know what a master psychologist can I do, you know? So all these people can treat you and look at you with your specific symptoms. As much as you want to get into the ring and start saying like, I have this or I have that, because I think it could be easily to Google. I just want to say for Mental Health Awareness Month, like work with a professional, work with someone that is willing to really be with you in your process and understand what you're going through. And lastly, if you've tried finding like a therapist or a coach or a psychologist or someone that is in their world and it didn't work out, please don't give up. Keep trying to find someone that works for you and that understands you. And I think the last thing, and I know Liv will probably agree with me, is like in this world today, you got to advocate for yourself. And one thing advocating for yourself is just giving your best interest and asking a lot of questions for yourself, so you also have a true understanding of what's the best for you. Because at the end of the day, you get to decide that and you're on board with that decision. Is there anything else you want to add to that? Because I know you've been through this process before.
Yeah, I think too, like a huge part, because I know it could be hard, especially like just speaking of like therapy, you know, a good resource for, you know, if you're trying to find a therapist or, you know, that takes your insurance, because I know sometimes the accessibility of things can be hard. PsychologyToday.com has been like, that's how I found my current therapist. And she's like a blessing, right? And you get to go through their profiles and see like, you know, what you're looking for specifically. You know, I know some people are looking more for other things, but just for that specifically, it's just like a really good resource that maybe not everyone knows about. Like, I know I know about it, maybe you know about it, but like, not sure if everyone else knows about it. And also, like, if you work with someone and it's not a good fit, it's okay to express that and switch providers. I think a lot of us also feel guilty, or we get like someone that's not a good fit for us, and then automatically are like, this isn't going to work for me, this is not helpful, you know? And it's just sometimes it's a matter of just finding the right provider for what you need, and also like that feeling safe with them is like a huge thing. So I just wanted to embed it.
No, I love that. Thank you for doing that, because I think, yeah, it's so important. And my biggest thing is to don't give up. Like, don't give up, you know. Having, I think personally, like having a space to be completely honest, vulnerable, completely unbiased opinion, a container where you can like let everything out, is probably one of the most healing things in general. And then when someone actually sees you in that and can support you in that in the best way to like what you need in that moment, like that is like life changing in a lot of ways. And so it's so special to find that spot, but don't give up on trying to find that spot. That's like really, I just feels like so many people get stuck on like, I don't even know where to start, who to talk to, get so overwhelmed. There's so many people out there, but just try. Cause I don't know, I just don't want to see so many people struggling, like internally struggling. Like, it brings tears to my eyes, like thinking about how many people in our world are internally struggling and they don't feel heard, seen, or understood.
Yeah, I agree. And the same thing goes with like those that aren't diagnosed with ADHD and might think that they have it. A lot of women specifically get dismissed or told, oh, it's just depression, it's just anxiety. You know, I've been there before. Find a second opinion, because no one should be dismissing you. They should be referring you to get an actual evaluation, because that is the only way that anyone can tell if you actually have ADHD or not. So just, again, it's back to that advocating for yourself, as frustrating as it is, as annoying as it is, knowing what's going on and getting the support that you need is just, it does make a difference.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast and sharing your story and talking so much to ADHD, neurodivergent, mental health, the process of just finding your way in this life, because I think it's all tied together. So yeah, it was such a blessing to have you. You're so well spoken, so well educated, so well researched, and also like so well experienced. Because you're also going through this, and I think I really think it's going to meet a lot of people. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.